Cool. Well, I hope I can offer some insights or anything of value.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin.
Sapnin.
You are listening to episode 149 of Sapnin Podcast with myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. And this week, we've scored a blockbuster guest to soundtrack a supernatural conversation.
Yes, this week's guest is composer, producer, musician, and all-round fantastic human being, Tyler Bates.
Yes, and what a legend to so many different aspects of music Tyler Bates is. He's a huge name behind the scenes when it comes to record producing, scoring major Hollywood films, and renowned touring guitarist. He's done it all. And this is a very unique opportunity for us to explore the art of composing as well as his overall phenomenal career. I mean, when you just look at his movie credits alone, it's enough to blow your mind, right? Tyler has helped soundtrack iconic franchises like John Wick, Guardians of the Galaxy, 300, Deadpool, Halloween, Fast and Furious, Dawn of the Dead. It just keeps going on. It's absolutely insane. And I think this is just one conversation that you and I just nerded out, wanting to learn more of this mad world.
Yes, yes. He was absolutely super, Tyler. Thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much to his people for setting it up. We had a fantastic time. And I don't want to spoil the interview you're about to listen to, but let's just say David Hasselhoff gets mentioned and Tyler's on about hooking us up with David Hasselhoff. So I'm not saying any more than that. You have to listen on. But what a fantastic chat with the absolutely lovely Tyler Bates. Thank you very much for coming on, brother.
Yeah. Well, fingers crossed the Hoff can come on. But it's just nice to have someone of a different aspect of the industry, and especially getting into the world of films. Tell us a lot more about that.
Well, yeah, it's a very, very different chat to our normal ones about touring and being in a band and stuff. And yeah, we were really, really excited to do it when we got offered it. And yeah, very, very, very much enjoy it. And I believe you will too, listener. Dear listener, you're going to enjoy this, I think.
But not only that, but on top of everything, he's produced for the likes of Bush, Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains, and obviously was the guitarist for Marilyn Manson for a few years, who he does talk about, but we don't dwell on too much due to recent allegations and all that. But you're going to hear a very special insight into the world of music and film, unbelievable anecdotes on a lot of his back catalogue.
Anecdotes.
That anecdotes. Too. You're going to get that too.
And he's giving us antidotes. He's giving us some the cure to music. You drink this and you can play anything on guitar.
As well as just how awesome Keanu Reeves is as a person. A few extra paranormal activities. And one thing that scared / floored us right at the end of the conversation too. So you have to stay tuned for all of it, because it's... It's didn't it's expect fucking, that.
The more I think about it, the madder the chat is. Let's get this fucking fantastic, well-renowned fucking producer and guitarist on. What are we talking about? Ghosts. Class.
Yes.
Class. Aww. Absolutely class. But yeah, if you enjoyed this episode or any of the other episodes, please check out patreon.com/sapnin. where there is a load more extras and behind the scenes stuff for you to check out, and it all goes back into supporting this podcast and making us helping us to make this each and every week. So thank you very much to everybody who's already a part of our Patreon. If you've listened to two or more episodes of this, come on man, just join the gang. patreon.com/sapnin. That's patreon.com/sapnin. And while I'm also spelling things, give us a shout out on our socials, on Twitter and Instagram, at Sapnin Pod. That's at sapnin pod. That's at sapnin pod. And tell us who you want as a future guest. Tell us what you thought of this episode. Tell us what you thought about previous episodes. And any questions you have or ideas or anything you want to suggest, you can get in touch with us at Sapnin Bloody Pod. Forget yes. The bloody bit.
Yes, please. I agree with everything Sean just said. And our Patreon community is one of the favourite things we've ever done. We're going to be celebrating a lot of milestones very, very soon and doing some in-person meetups and all that malarkey. So if you want to get involved, patreon.com/sapnin is the best way to support us. But let's not dwell on anything else for the moment, because the legend that is Mr. Tyler Bates is going to be talking about everything music, films, video games, and his new DC Dark Knights death metal project, which involves soundtracks and short films, including everyone from Andy Biersack to David Hasselhoff. If you want to know more, it's coming up right now.
Sapnin! I am going to fucking Hasselhoff if he sends me his email address.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Sapnin.
Yay!
I wasn't sure then. There was a slight second.
I got snagged there for a second because you asked for the magic clap, and I'm thinking, I've tried to avoid that my whole life. So.
and here's me just throwing it around willy-nilly.
Quite interesting. Yeah. That's how you get it.
This week's guest is a musician, producer, composer, multi-instrumentalist, just all-round legend in Tyler Bates. How are you, Tyler?
I'm good, man. It's good to see you. You know, I don't know about the, you know, the descriptors that you just laid out there for me, but I appreciate it.
What was I wrong? You are all of those things, whether you like it or not.
It's true.
Yeah, I would equate legend with age, so I guess you're right. You're correct.
No, but we really appreciate you taking the time to have a chat with us, man. Thank you very, very much. As we're recording this, we can see you're in the studio. I'm sure you basically just live there at the moment with the amount of projects and just music you're always working on. How's things been lately? Is it just being busy as ever?
Yeah, you know, I mean, honestly, during COVID, any composer pretty much always worries that they'll never get another phone call. So I don't know, during COVID, you know, because I'm used to working at such a pretty intense velocity, I had to dive in and create something. So we ended up doing this Dark Knight's death metal project. But now... that the world is somewhat reopening. I'm busy as all get out, thankfully, gratefully.
Nice. Yeah.
Yes. Knock wood.
So. Yeah. Well, there's plenty we want to dive into in this conversation, but I would love to start with the kind of composing aspect of your work and everything you do, because I think there's a lot of music lovers listening to this who will not be really sure about the ins and outs on that side of the industry in particular. Now, you've worked on some huge titles in film and TV, including Deadpool, Guardians of the Galaxy, John Wick. How does the whole process happen? Is it a really long, thought out thing where you maybe have to get approved? Is it something where they contact you? Can you really run through how these things normally happen?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, from the beginning of a career to get to the place where you're doing big studio movies is, for most people, a pretty long haul. For me, it definitely was. I think things can be a little bit, you know, on a more expedited trajectory now, just because of the many more outlets or just the product that there is being created today, as opposed to the volume of product created 20 years ago. So I do think there are more opportunities now, but you know, there's a tremendous amount of scrutiny placed upon any composer who is hired for practically any job at this point. It's an extremely competitive business, which I never really had thought of it that way when I first got into it. Cause I started this side of the profession just by being asked by random people to score their low budget movies. And at some point I needed to keep the lights on. So I kept pursuing opportunities in film and television after my my band in the late 90s split up. So I really enjoyed the collaborative process with directors, because it, you know, I'd worked with singers my whole life, but this type collaboration was a matter of focusing our energies on storytelling and emotion, and led to, for me, to a greater understanding of people in general, and also to be able to adapt to so many different types of people involved in any creative endeavor. So, of course, a director is going to understand a little bit more of the concise language of communicating about music, but maybe there's a producer who has a huge creative investment in the movie or television series, and they're really not well versed in music, and it's my job to create a vernacular in the conversation so they don't have to understand, you know, formal terminology. But to get to the place where you're doing big movies, it's usually investing in directors that you see as very talented and driven, and work with them on their no budget to low budget projects, and hopefully they take off from there, and occasionally they do. And it's cool to be on that journey, regardless of what the result is.
Nice. Yeah. Well, yeah. Going back to your time, like when you were in the band and that crossover period, I guess, like, what is there one film or TV show or game or anything that you worked on early on that was like the catalyst of you going, oh, well, this is what I want to do full time now?
Well, full time, that was a different moment. But I'd say, like, I had never met another composer until I completed 18 movies, you know? So
I was
purely just using my experience in the studio and learning from directors and producers, editors, re-recording mixers, and just absorbing as much of their process as possible so I could apply it to my own. But I did a bebop movie that was like my 15th score, I think, that came out on Blue Note. And I thought, okay, this is pretty cool. It's, you know, especially because my band at the time was an unpleasant experience. And then, you know, probably our greatest heights were probably playing the Warped Tour and like playing CBGBs and stuff, you know. So there were moments that were cool. But, you know, right around the year 1999, 2000, I worked with Emilio Estevez on this movie called Rated X. And then my friend Stephen Kay and I worked on Get Carter with Stallone. And
yeah,
that was like my first reel in, right? But then, you know, the funny thing is I went to the theater with my wife and a friend to see Get Carter the Saturday it opened. And we're in Hollywood at what used to be the Galaxy Theater. And right before the movie starts, you know, the Kodak commercial comes on with the two guys, you know, basically showing you how they're watching after the quality of the movie. And in the middle of that, the movie just sort of died. It came to a screeching halt. I'm like, oh, this cannot be a good omen. So that movie tanked.
Oh,
so it took me about five studio movies till I got one that actually did a respectable number at the box office. And that was like many, many movies into my career. Dawn of the Dead, I think it was, I don't know why I'm thinking of these numbers, but I think it was like number 33 or something, you know, and that was my first number one film. So that was cool. But once that happens, then you have more opportunities, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, that's awesome. And it's absolutely interesting for me to hear that. Yeah. It took, you know, that long, I suppose, you know, because bands really don't get that many chances. Like, I guess you couldn't probably do 33 albums and then be like, I'm coming up, I'm telling the next one, number 34, it's the fucking big gun. But yeah, how does songwriting differ from like being in a band to a film? I have no idea. This is why I am so out of my depth here.
Yeah.
Like, how do you go about creating?
Well, with songwriting, in my experience, it's generally been either myself or me working with one, possibly two other writers. But generally, it's just myself and an individual. And, you know, I've had many of those type collaborations. And I liken it to working with a director, even writing a film score. I'm thinking of the actors in their character roles and their voices taking the similar space in the picture as a vocalist would in a song. I think one has informed the next throughout my career. So I've always found it important to continue my work as a writer, producer, you know, just being in the studio working on songs. The great thing about that is usually the buck stops there. If we think it's what we love, then it's what we love. If you're writing a score for a movie, it can be what you love, but it's also with the input and required approval of many people. So it's just a different process. And that type challenge is very interesting, because in order to be successful, really in any movie or any TV show, you have to learn to understand the sensibilities of a number of people and then just deal with the limitations of your resources, whether that's budget for production or it's time. So you learn to be very good with your time management. You learn to get to the point of your ideas, because there's limited time. Whereas if you're in a band, you could be not feeling it for a year and we're going to do the record next year, you know? So there are no creative days off when you have a job as a film composer or TV composer. So
I don't think they've released many films without the soundtrack coming like a year later.
you don't really get sick days, you know. Yeah. So because your time is so limited, you really do learn to focus. I've always been very prolific as a writer in bands, but you know, I have to admit there have been times where, you know, you get sidetracked just from playing in the band, partying, life, whatever, and you can go, you know, a month without writing a song. But that's changed. You know, I write music all the time. And, you know, as composers, we publish a hell of a lot of music every year, probably more than most recording artists do in a career. But, you know, again, an underscore is not the same thing as a song. But in the case of this conversation, I guess if what stoked it is the Dark Knight's death metal soundtrack, that filmmaking sensibility went into the concept for that record, and also the storytelling and emotion of, you know, as a composer, is basically what I tried to, that's basically how I tried to engage each of the artists, was really to be moved by the material and to express an idea or an emotion based specifically on that material, but not necessarily like anyone else would do it, just how they interpreted it. Same as with the people voicing the characters, you know. But I know that in making stuff like that, you know, just like some of the music I've done, I know that sometimes it can succeed and sometimes it might not. But, you know, you kind of have to not give a damn and just do, aspire to what you are after and aspire to what you love. And being a life as a film composer is a life of rejection for all the things that you see our names on. They're 100 times as many things that didn't work out the way we'd hoped it would. So,
well, in that vein, is there anybody or is there anything that you were part of that kind of didn't happen that you were gutted about?
No, you know, I don't look at life that way. I look at experiences as something to grow from. There's a way you would like things to go, but if they go in another direction, there's always something to take away from that. But as part of your accrued wisdom, you know, and that's at least one thing you get with experience is wisdom, which can help guide you to better decision making. It can help you become a better person, can help you become a better collaborator. So sometimes if things don't necessarily work out as you'd hoped, it's important to look for something to learn from the experience and take it with you to the next. So, you know, that's pretty much how I look at everything I'm involved in.
Nice. Yeah, it's a very interesting process. I think a lot of people are going to be get some really good insight into that. But like when you get, so say now you've been approved to work on a film, or you've had a phone call and you've been talking to a producer or a director or anything, how does that first initial bit of work happen? Do you like get sent over a brief of what the film is? Do you get sent certain scenes that they want you to work on in particular? Like, how does the process start from the sense of, you know, you're working on it to then starting on the music? What's that in between period like for you?
It depends on the relationship with the director. Oftentimes the first time I work with a director, I'll come on board right as they're entering post-production, where they're doing the editing and visual effects and whatnot. But once I've worked with the director, they usually ask me to come on board early to help develop some of the musical language or musical concepts prior to filming even. And a number of directors I've worked with have filmed to music that I wrote as an inspiration piece, you know, a suggestion for an idea or a theme for the movie. And at least with that, they can play it on set, so the crew and the actors can hear kind of like the sensibility of the tone of the music in the film. Even though it rarely remains the same, it's still the beginning of a cycle of communication that's related to that particular property. And, you know, I try and do it as much as possible so that the music we're referencing and referencing in the context of the movie is mine, as opposed to either someone else's or mine from a different movie or a different TV show. So I try and get out in front of it as much as possible. It's, you know, time does not always permit for that to occur, but I do enjoy that work. It's fun to really be able to create freely for a while before, you know, the hourglass is turned over and everything happens at hyperspeed. So, you know, scoring like a blockbuster type film is really the equivalent of painting a mural on the side of a moving train. You know, it's it's a challenge even when it's sitting still. So again, you have to become very quick with your mind and with your ideas, and very perceptive to people around you, so you can proceed with the correct information. That's the key to really, I think, being successful on a very base level with film and television. Just to understand everyone's sensibilities to the best of your capacity, and then work from there.
Yeah, no, I'm sure with different kinds of films as well, it all depends on that kind of atmosphere and the whole vibe of emotion of a certain scene or film. And especially if you look at like obviously your work with the John Wick trilogy in particular, I'm sure that's one that can stand out in terms of trying to switch up a vibe and honing on those different emotions for very pivotal scenes.
Yeah, I mean, John Wick is super fun for myriad reasons. Chad Stahelski, the director, is really amazing. I mean, he's lethal. He's a badass. So all those stunts, I mean, he's done them, you know. I mean, he was Keanu's double for The Matrix, and
oh, wow.
Chad's very famous in that world. And stunt people have a great sense of team. They understand that it requires more than just themselves to be successful in the endeavor of making a movie. So it is fun to work with Chad, just like David Leitch, because you definitely feel like you're part of a team. And they're not afraid to take risks. You know, Chad loves to take risks. And then with the John Wick series, I started that with my friend Joel Richard, and he and I are like brothers. So it's fun to share our ideas and push each other into exploring different concepts and seeing what we come up with. You know, it's the whole thing has been intense, but certainly a lot of fun.
Nice, yeah. And am I right in saying that on John Wick 2, there's actually a scene where you can be seen performing with Jeremy from Alice in Chains?
No, it's me. Yeah. Chad asked me to go to Rome to do it. So my friend Dylan Island, he's a DJ known as La Castlevania. He's in that.
I know him, yeah.
So Dylan's a close friend of mine, and so I brought him into the first John Wick to do some club tracks for us. And then on the second one, Chad asked that we make up this avant-garde group that was performing in the Baths of Caracalla. And then Cassandra Nostalgia is the singer in that. So essentially, I wasn't planning on doing it, but about a week before that was shot, Chad called from Rome, and he's like, dude, I can't cast an extra to do this part. He says, bring one of those effed up looking instruments that you play with the bow, and all that makeup you wear with Marilyn Manson. And he says, that's what I want you to look like in the scene. I'm like, all right, I'll do it. So,
nice.
But, you know, I mean, when a director has that sort of kick-ass attitude, you'll run through a wall for him. And it was a lot of fun. It was cold as hell, but it was a lot of fun. You know, interesting anecdote. Here's something to be said for John Wick and specifically Keanu Reeves. So Dylan, La Castlevania, he and I were outside our trailers one night because we were shooting overnights. And, you know, he asked Keanu, he's like, hey, it was a Friday night. We were going to have the next two nights off. And then us, you know, band people were finishing our shoot on a Monday night. And so this is on a Friday night. And Dylan's like, hey, Keanu, I know it's kind of lame to ask, but before we're done, can we take a photo together? And he's like, Dylan, yeah, sure, man. So, you know, Keanu was just having a smoke, you know, just getting ready for the beginning of the shoot. So anyway, we do our thing that night, and then we're off for the weekend while they're filming. And mind you, Keanu's black and blue, you know, when he's doing this. He's getting his body beat up. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going straight from the set to an ice bath, you know?
<It's Yeah>. Like, wow.
He leaves it all out on the field, so to speak. So anyway, we're shooting our final night, and it's like, I don't know, 4 a.m, something like that. It's cold as hell. And I see all of a sudden to my right, about 30 yards out, is Keanu Reeves just leaning against this huge rock wall. And we still film for like 40 more minutes, you know, and we're talking at the end of a long, long day. And so we're done. They say, all right, it's a wrap. And all of a sudden, Keanu just walks over and says, "Hey, Dylan, let's do that photo." Nobody would do
that. He waited. No. What?
Nobody would do it.
That's fucking insane.
Anybody else would have said, "Oh, sorry, you know, it's a long day. He had to go." Yeah. You know, I mean, nobody does that. So, I mean, I can share.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a... That kind of spirit, though, is pervasive in the John Wick series. And even when I was out touring in this past several years, there were people that I met all around the world who were just so into John Wick. It was super inspiring and fun to know that it was really landing with people in countries around the world. So, yeah, nice. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah. It must be nice as well to have that kind of crossover where you could have an opportunity like that to kind of incorporate your film scores and all the band stuff and work as a musician on the other side of things at the same time when you have some opportunities like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is cool. And yeah, Cantrell and I, by the way, we did write a song for the second John Wick film, and it's been great that I've had the opportunity to do that in all of the movies, the John Wick film. So, Jerry's a good friend, and it was great to do that. Same with Gavin Rossdale on the last one. We were writing songs for his record anyway. So, Bullet Holes just kind of happened. It wasn't written for John Wick per se, but it just kind of happened. So anyway, you know, it's, you know, that series has definitely led to a lot of interesting collaborations outside the films. So really grateful that, I've had the opportunity to work on it.
Yeah, have you come across any directors who just don't have a clue musically? Who are just like, I don't know what to, like, or does somebody always come to you with like the idea or the premise, or do they? Yeah, have you ever had? I guess what I'm trying to say is, have you ever had a director just come up and it's like, look, I don't know anything about this. You create it. Oh, okay.
Yes, and you know, sometimes they're among the greatest directors to work with. It's more dangerous when they say they know music inside and out, because that's an opinion, I guess. But, you know, if you hire an artist, and, you know, we are some form of a commission, we're commissioned fine artists to some extent as composers, you probably want to allow the artist to put the paint on the canvas before you start giving them directions, you know. And I think excellent directors really encourage you to do that. Some want to control everything so much that at some point, you know, the limitations can be extremely frustrating. But, you know, that's also a challenge, you know, that you grow from. So one of the things I've learned in life is to use your experiences to really know the type of people you want in your life and the type of experiences you want to have, and just focus more on manifesting that. And fortunately happened. So I have incredible people in my life and extremely talented people who are constantly providing presenting challenges to me that help me to grow. So it's good, you know. I'm still fired up every day of my life. So
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm just looking at this list here now of people, and it's just unbelievable, like the amount of people, the level of people you've worked with, and the amount of people and how many you've collaborated with three or four times as well. So that's got to say a lot about how you work as well, that they've come back to you as well. But how was working with like Zack Snyder on Dawn of the Dead, and then 300, and then Watchmen, Sucker Punch. Yeah, it's nonstop. How's that?
Look, here's another like just crazy story about the business. So, and, you know, again, after a couple of those studio movie flops, I was back down to, you know, ground zero again. And a music supervisor by the name of G. Mark Roswell was very prominent in the 90s and in the first decade of this century. And he and I became good friends through this experience. But he was the music supervisor on this little Mario Van Peebles movie called Badass, which essentially he was playing his own father in that film. And while I loved doing that movie, I lost money on the movie. You know, it was like tiny, tiny, but it was really great working with Mario and working with G-Mark. And so G-Mark got into Dawn of the Dead, and I didn't even realize they're making a new Dawn of the Dead. But he told me about it. And he says, hey, I think you would be great on Dawn of the Dead. And I'm like, but I don't have a repertoire of like creepy orchestral music, you know, whereas there are many composers in Hollywood who did. And he said, you know what, I'm going to give you the script and just write a couple pieces of music just so when the time comes that you have something to play to the director. I'm like, all right. I still didn't have a great repertoire, even though the darker, creepier, you know, vibes are natural to me. I grew up in a very creepy environment. So it's like I felt it my whole childhood. But so anyway, I finally got a meeting with Zack Snyder and I had the two pieces of music I'd written, but I made a CD of tons of avant-garde music, just weird stuff. And then stuff that now has become a little more commonplace, like Penderecki and Ligeti and Bartek. And so anyway, the funny thing is I'm meeting with Zack Snyder, the editor, and G. Mark Roswell, and they're meeting with every composer who's done a scary movie in Hollywood. I give them this CD and I'm like, check out track 8, it's Penderecki. And just as I said that, Eric Newman, Randy Newman's son, wow, was the producer. He walked into the meeting with a CD in his hand. He says, oh my God, my dad said if he was directing this movie, he would use Penderecki's music. So he had a Penderecki CD in his hand.
Wow.
So Zach didn't even know what a Penderecki was. And when I played him a piece of music from it, he's like, oh my God, that is disturbing. He said, that's amazing. And I said, well, I'm just telling you, that's conceptually like kind of one element to the score that I would introduce, that concept. So he liked it. But then needless to say, they went and they were hiring a different composer. The studio, I think, made an executive decision and it didn't work out. And weeks later, you know, I'd already seen the Dawn of the Dead trailer at the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie I went and saw that Marcus Mispel directed. And then I get a call from G. Mark Roswell and he says, hey, I think this movie could be yours. I'm like, what happened? And he just said, you know, it didn't work out so far with music. And every time we talk about music, the directors keep saying that he likes that Tyler guy. So he wants to meet you again. And one thing led to the next and there you go. And so that movie ended up being, yeah, my first number one.
Nice.
Yeah. That's, yeah, what a story. And then, yeah, to go on to...
Well, yeah, I think you've had like 11 featured films go to number one straight away at the box office that you've worked on as well. So
I don't know, somewhere around there. But I'm grateful to have even one, you know? So,
yeah.
You never know where one thing will lead. You know, I've nearly every director I've worked with, at their beginnings was on something more independent. And then a few of them have blown up into bigger careers and whatnot. And sometimes they don't, but even some of those directors are among my very favorite to work with. So I really don't care that much. As long as the people are cool, I'm down.
Nice.
You know?
Well, speaking of just mad experiences, we've got to talk about Dark Knight's death metal. What a project this must have been to work on, because not only are you really soundtracking just different experiences from some iconic DC characters, but collaborating with some huge names in rock and metal like Andy Biersack, Chino from Deftones, Dave Lombardo. How was this, all of that for you? How did it start? Because that kind of collaboration between those two worlds of the comic books and metal just seemed like a perfect fit with this.
Yeah, I mean, I've been attuned to it for a while, and having worked on so many graphic novel oriented films and video games and just sort of fantastical type movies and whatnot, it's always sparked my imagination for the many potential dimensions that these properties could be expressed or supported by with music. And, you know, I love rock music, of course. I mean, I've played it my whole life. And, obviously I play guitar all the time and I'm recording all the time. So I'm always looking for an excuse to focus on that side of my creativity. Right before COVID, Matt Keller from DC Comics called me, and he and I have known each other for years. And he asked if I would be interested in creating a soundtrack for Dark Knight's death metal. I knew Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. I mean, those guys are at the top of their game and incredible people, as well as absolutely gifted artists. I was like, sure, you know, but then COVID hit and I'm like, all right, how are we going to make this happen? And I had already just talked to, you know, the first song that was being made for the soundtrack was Now You've Really Done It. And I did that with Greg Pucciato. Yeah. Greg Capullo's the illustrator. Greg Pucciato. From Dillinger Escape Plan, and then my friend Gil Sharon. You know, Gil and I are like brothers, and Greg and I have become to be like brothers as well. But so we did that song, and then I had been interested in working with Chelsea Wolfe, and I decided I was going to track her down just to do a song together. And then the timing of this worked out. And then the same thing with Starcrawler, and then Gunship had contacted me simultaneously to do a collab with them. And so they had, Dan Hay kept referencing Dave Lombardo in that conversation. And I'm like, why don't we just have Dave play drums on it? And he's like, what?
I love that.
I'm like, Dave's one of my close friends, you know? I mean, we're our wives are close. We're close. We hang out a lot. So Dave's always up for a challenge to step out of his comfort zone or what he's known as a musician, and to take on a new challenge. So Dave played on Berserker. And so that made sense for it to then become part of the record. And then we worked outward from there. And of course, when Loma Vista came on board as our label partner, we then examined, you know, some of their artists like Health. Those guys are my friends and we've worked together before. So that makes perfect sense, you know, and I love working with those guys. And then, you know, I had a prior experience with Bron from Mastodon, and we had discussed Mastodon and thought that was a great idea, and so on and so forth. But the collaboration between DC and the label and myself and then all the artists was really fun. I think the motion comic aspect of it, the Sonic Metalverse, was probably me figuring, what the hell? It's like COVID. I don't have any work. So we're just going to blow this thing up, and I'm going to just try and have some fun and engage the artists in a forum that would allow for all of them to intersect, even though they don't know one another, and to literally intersect in the construct of the source material. So there are artists, I'm pretty sure, who don't know one another. You know, not most of them don't know David Hasselhoff, but Hasselhoff's a good friend of mine. So it's not like, David, will you do Superman? He's like, sure, pal. You know, whatever. So
what? Awesome.
No, David's been a great friend. And so
I believe we're trying to get hold of David actually to come on the podcast.
He lives to Welsh apparently, doesn't he? So
yeah, he's married he's married a girl who lives 10 miles away from where we live. So we're trying to get in touch with David. Haley, coming on.
Haley, well, you guys will just have to email me and I'll link you up with David directly, because
that'd be fantastic.
He's in Germany right now, I think, till October. But we just cut his new single right before he left. And like I said, he's a good friend. And he is in Starcrawler's video that's going to premiere next week for the song that's on the Dark Knight's Death Metal soundtrack. It's actually the only proper music video for the record. So it's a great, great video that Gilbert Trejo directed. And, you know, Starcrawler and I are working together right now on their new record. So it's all part of just this ongoing conversation we've had. So
yeah,
a lot of fun. But yeah, David just did that for me as a favor. He's like, sure, you want me to go downtown and do what? I'm like, you know, if you can go downtown and be in this video with this band that I'm working with, they're awesome. I didn't even go to the shoot. So
imagine being that band, though. Imagine being Starcall, and you're like, is that fucking has David Hasselhoff turned up? I'm like, what? Like, yeah, Tyler sent him. Is Tyler coming? No. Go introduce yourself to David Hasselhoff. Unbelievable. Yeah. That's fucking brilliant.
Are you kidding? Those kids are so cool. They've been through everything and they know everyone. So I don't think they were shocked by any stretch, but the Hoff was a good, he was a good sport and did whatever he was asked to do and had fun. And he's always looking to elevate every situation. actually, the Sonic Metalverse was born of a long trailer that I essentially made. And so it was really just limited to Andy Biersack from Black Veil Brides and Chelsea Wolf. And then, and Charles Fleischer, who's a good friend of mine, who was the voice of Roger Rabbit. And, you know, he's a fascinating friend fascinating person I've become friends with over the past several years. But, so Charles has such an incredible voice, and he voiced Joker for us in this thing. And Andy was so good, and Chelsea was so good. And then Charles, once DC saw it, they're like, you know, how would you feel about blowing this up into like a full series? I'm like, well, that's a hell of a lot of work, but you know, because it's really just a pet project, you know, I mean, it's not, there was no budget for that, but it was fun. And, you know, fortunately each of the artists came to the table with a great deal of enthusiasm to voice a DC character. And the cool thing was, it's like, we're fans of the comics and we really didn't care what anybody thought about previous voices of the characters. We were just doing our own thing. Fortunately, Scott and Greg participated. So that was a signal to the fans that they endorse whatever, you know, we're doing with this thing. But it was really just a matter of us celebrating their work, and also a great way for the artists on the soundtrack to meet in one medium based on the material. Again, you know, the songs were created that way, as were these performances, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah. No, just the whole kind of crossover and just the like parallels between the two worlds is just a brilliant idea. I mean, like, you know, as a kid, I would have loved to have had something like this and known that Batman was into metal.
Yeah, well, it makes sense with the comics, though, right? You know, I mean, it's such a visual world, and there's so much conflict in at least, you know, DC comics. You know, there's a lot of dark human nature that's expressed through these stories. And I think a lot of what is written about in metal songs, rock songs, is applicable. You know, it taps into that sort of violent world, or the corner of your, you know, darkest corner of your mind, and also the fantasy world. So the premise of writing songs based on this material was very natural for all the artists. We did set out to make a diverse soundtrack and just wanted to make it as holistic as possible. So like, once Dave was involved with us on the Gunship Berserker track, then the motion comic happened. I'm like, Dave, would you mind doing a guest spot on all the motion comics? He's like, yeah, sure, dude, I'm into it. So Dave was our guest musician on each of the 7 episodes.
Nice. Wow.
How did you, because some of these are loads of very different artists, like you got Denzel Curry on there as well, and I'm just wondering, if did you have these people in mind prior to it, or were they somehow suggested to you, or how did that work?
I would say it was a combination of both. Obviously, the record company, Loma Vista, and I have had working relationship for years. And of course, they had ideas, but we know each other well enough to have, like, you know, honest conversations about what we think is right. And there were really no conflicts in that discussion. It was all really proactive, very much coming from the same brain when we were talking about asking artists to be on the soundtrack, and everyone we wanted to be on it joined us for it. It was amazing. But there are also aspects to my prior experiences that have probably factored into this. Dave Lombardo, the reason he and I met each other was because a friend at Schecter Guitars introduced us when I was doing Dawn of the Dead. I wanted Dave to play drums on Dawn of the Dead, so he did. That's where we became friends. That's 100 years ago. But everybody that we asked to be part of this was enthusiastic about it. And it's really interesting how they tapped into different aspects of the material, and to engage the artists and to change up, like, say, the perspective on the comic. I didn't give the same issue of the comic to the similar artists. Like, I chose disparate artists to focus on the issues. Now, it wasn't an assignment for them to give a literal recitation or you know, summary of any comic issue. It was just a matter of that's the source material for your inspiration for whatever you're going to write. We don't need to talk about the actual characters themselves. And so I found it to be very interesting. The Soccer Mommy song, I think the issue that I gave to Sophie was the same one that Bran from Mastodon got. So,
ooh. Yeah, it's interesting to see how they came up with different shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
So, but they were asked to just remain themselves and have fun and don't worry about writing singles. Just write a song that you feel is your natural response to the material. And I think because there wasn't this mandate to try and write hit songs or try and write metal songs or what have you, everyone was free to do what they wanted to do. And, you know, I crossed over on a lot of the songs with the artists, and it was good fun. But I think that's why we have such a spirited album. And then so many of the artists on the record know DC Comics inside and out. Like, besides Andy Biersack, who you're not going to stump him on anything, you will not stump Denzel Curry either. He knows this stuff front to back. So it's really cool to nerd out with everybody and just be into it, you know? So it wasn't about, once we got into the process, it wasn't about the status in the business or someone being a rock star or not. It was just about creating music we thought was great and that we enjoyed. And I thought that was really one of the most rewarding aspects of the project, was that, you know, artistically it was very pure. And, you know, I'm always aspiring to set the table for those type of collaborations, you know, just things that really are exciting and elevate people. And, you know, where the end result is not something that was just strictly mandated, or it's not pandering to the expectations of a fan base.
And speaking of, like, producing work and working with other artists like that in particular, I know earlier you mentioned about working with Gavin Rossdale and Bush on their last record. You produced and co-wrote a lot of those songs. And I was wondering if you could just talk to us about that process a bit, because I've listened to that record quite a lot. It seems that it's really returned Bush to form with a lot of their diehard fans as well. What is it like working with Gavin in a close environment like that?
Gavin's great. I mean, he's an absolute pro, an incredible singer, and a very, very diligent, hard worker when it comes to writing songs and lyrics. He's continually, like, revising his lyrics, really working toward making the best. The work part is fairly effortless with him. He and I, for whatever reason, just had kismet in the studio. His manager's a friend of mine. Just asked us to get together and see if we were inspired to write. And, you know, we knocked out a few songs really rather quickly and had a lot of fun doing it. And, you know, have become very good friends in the process. And it feels good to be part of that. And, you know, we've worked on some new material, which we're excited about. And, you know, if I have anything to do with an artist kind of getting a new surge of energy in their music or their career, I'm thrilled. It goes both ways though. You know, it's not just me doing stuff. You know, Gavin is somebody who has such charisma and energy that it makes me raise my game and inspires me to want to play and to create. And very fortunate that my immediate friend group is like that. Like Jerry Cantrell, He's a very close friend. We just worked on his solo record together, and it's an amazing record. I don't think it's exactly what everyone might expect, but it's better than what that is. I think. because he's so passionately fired up about music, and yeah. It's fun to help stoke those fires, you know? So really that's the greatest thrill for me, is to try and help people, especially when they're more seasoned, get back to that 17-year-old version of themselves, not give a shit about anything, but just, it's all about making music and and loving that and getting excited over a song or a riff. That's the fun stuff. And you have to set the table for that to happen in your life, or it just isn't going to happen. And, you know, I've had, again, the good fortune of meeting so many interesting people and having circumstances that lead to from one thing to the next. You know, working with Starcrawler now has been an incredible journey with them, and to see this new record develop the way it has is it's got us all very amped. And to be part of the development of that music and be part of those moments where, you know, the artist is excited about what's happening is for me, it's very energizing. So
yeah,
I'm way into it.
Yeah, no, it's lovely to see you just trying to get that passion from artists and stuff as well. But talking about all those different people you've worked with in terms of like rock and metal and everything like that, you said basically from Bush to Rob Zombie as people you've had the pleasure of collaborating with in the past. Who surprised you the most, like creatively? Is there anyone that really sticks out to you that you were like, oh my God, like their process or just the way they work really stuck with you after all these years?
Oh, everyone has a remarkable process. I've worked a lot with Alexis Krauss from Sleigh Bells. She's phenomenal. I can't say enough about her. You know, kind of edged out topic is Marilyn Manson. My creative work with him was phenomenal. Like, every session was always spirited. It was very positive. And it's a touchy subject, obviously, because there's so much swirling around him right now. But my personal experience creatively was extremely positive. And we're both really proud of the music that we made. And it just really felt like we were just doing it for ourselves. It wasn't about, oh, well, people will like this or people will like that. It's like, what do we like? And, you know, he definitely pushed me to play a lot of guitar on his records that we did together. So it was just fun. I can only be responsible for the creative aspect of relationships. You know, I try and bring out the best in people, and I've been lucky enough to have many people around me do that in return. And so that's where I relate to these creative experiences. I mean, if everyone in Hollywood stopped working because they work with some people who have some issues, then there would be nothing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, same here. Same here. Is it a question I want to know? Is there anyone who you've not worked with yet who you are dying to collaborate with?
You know, this is interesting. A few years ago, maybe it's 2017, I guess, Lil Uzi Vert was at my studio.
What?
And I really, I like him a lot. And we were talking about working together, but I was out touring. I was in Europe and Japan and stuff at the time. So I was not available to work with him. And then of course he exploded. But you know, I wanted to work with him then anyway. So it would be great if we're able to link up at some point. I'm just always, again, I'm up for the challenge. You know, I love rock music and I can lay into it pretty effortlessly on a daily basis. But there's so many artists I'd be down to work with, not just in rock music too. You know, like I said, my first score that was ever published really, or at least released on an album, was a bebop score. So I would be down to do some jazz records as a producer. You know, that'd be great. You know, the list is pretty long. I'm thankful for all the people who have trusted me enough to open themselves to working with me. So I'm very excited about the projects I have lined up, but I generally don't speak about them until they're in the can.
Yeah. That's fair. Totally understandable.
I don't think anybody listening to this is going to expect the answer Little Uzi Vert.
No.
And I am chuffed. I am eager to hear that project. So you've got to fucking do it now. We're going to make that happen. I'm going to write it down. I don't know him, but I'm going to find a way.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm working with some rappers right now that love metal music, so that's really interesting. So we're crossing genres between trap and metal, and it's really natural for them. Really natural for them. So I'm excited about where that will wind up, but we're in the thick of it right now. And you know, again, I love all music. I mean, there's great music of all genres and there's garbage of all genres. So, I'm always up for the challenge and I don't want to wash, rinse, repeat my life. You know, I want to continue to grow and see what's new and what I'm capable of, you know, and in the process, I know I'm going to fail at times, but the challenge is worth taking on just to see what you're made of, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to some of these new projects and collaborations. But Tyler, just a couple more very quick things as we wind down here and before we let you go. One thing I did want to ask, because obviously we've talked in depth about your work behind the scenes in a lot of films and albums, working with bands and stuff. But obviously, as people will know, you've toured the world performing, playing guitar at some of the biggest festivals, some of the biggest stages, some of the most famous arenas. When people look at your career, is it quite interesting for you, the fact that some people will recognize you as both sides of that spectrum, as someone in the spotlight, but also someone behind the scenes? Do you quite like the fact that you have that mixture?
I love to play live, perform, you know, whatever. It was interesting that, let's just say a little further on in my life was the first time I played for massive crowds, you know, but it was fun to go out playing music I'd written. In that context. So I'll always enjoy playing, performing and playing music. But my friends who are the actual rock stars have called me rock star and I correct them and I say, no, rock star adjacent.
Parallel.
Yeah. You know, I kind of prefer exactly that. I'm not if you look at my social media, for the most part, someone who works with me, one of my associates will repost something that the record company or a studio will put out. But, you know, I really don't care so much to have that type of focus on me. You know, I'm cool in a supporting role. As long as I can go out and smash a guitar every now and again, I'm happy. So, but I don't need to be the ticket, you know?
Yeah.
My experience is so unorthodox. I can, you know, I'm not unaware of it, but I just take it as it comes. So, you know, I know who I am well enough to not have to tell everyone what I'm doing, you know, or to draw attention to myself. You know, I'm just trying to work with great people and do things, you know, create things that I'm excited by and hopefully proud of at the end.
Nice. Well, that's a lovely, lovely look on everything. And one more question from me before we go. I've got to ask this because doing some research and trying to get some insight into things, I read that apparently you once lived in a haunted log cabin that you had to have two exorcisms in and everything. Is this true? Please just fill us in a little bit about that.
I hate to say it, but it's absolutely true.
Oh, wow.
And I would not expect the layperson to believe in serious paranormal activity unless they've experienced it. But it really took about a year before our family accepted the idea. We kind of thought we were going crazy at first, especially when my mother, who spent a lot of time alone in the house when we first moved out there. But it was a log cabin in the woods. And it was scary as hell living there, you know. It was a lot of work, too. We had horses, and it was a heavily forested area. So when I saw Halloween as a little kid, that just destroyed me. I was screwed forever. So,
And then you go on to work on Halloween. So it's a
now that is too weird. That's too weird. I mean, when Rob called me up one day and just said, "Hey, how would you feel about doing a Halloween movie?" I'm like, "Are you serious?" He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Yeah, cool." So he's like, "Well, do a new version of the theme, you know, just like amp it up or something. I need to make a presentation." So that's where we began. And that was an interesting challenge because, you know, the more you stay close to the original shape, you know, the Michael Myers shape, the less a deviation from the John Carpenter themes really will work in the context of that. I think that's why Rob really broke away from it more in the second movie and kind of really did his own thing, because the closer you are to the tradition of the Halloween franchise, the fewer choices you can actually make that will work. It's interesting how powerful, how completely galvanized John Carpenter's creation of that franchise is. I think there's nearly nothing in existence this is, what would the word be, proprietary. So it's very, very difficult to introduce ideas that are not cut from that cloth of his original first two films. Anyway, it was cool. It was cool. You know, when you go into something like that, a million people are going to hate on you for it, but c'est la vie. You know, Rob was great to work with.
Yeah. Just before we go, just to nip back to the paranormal story, because I know people are going to be going, you mentioned ghosts and then stop mentioning ghosts.
Oh, sorry.
No, not for you, for me. No, they're thinking of us. People listening to this now shouting, "Sean, get him to talk about the ghosts, for Christ's sake." So, what was the straw that broke the camel's back then? What made you need the exorcisms?
We had to replace the roof on the house, and then one of the roofers swore that he was punched in the face and he fell off the roof and broke his leg. Now, he and his brother have been doing this his whole life, and we knew a bunch of things had been occurring. And then, you know, my aunt and uncle were living with us at the time, and our, you know, my uncle was like a Charles Bronson type, you know, and hard ass, you know. That happened to him as well. He didn't break his leg, but some things happened to him when he was working on the house. He was an electrician. He was helping us out. And the sequence of events seemed to just completely amplify as time went on. And so my mother was very fascinated by all this. So she would meet different psychics and whomever. And so eventually we had the first exorcism performed in the house. I was not allowed to attend, but things got worse after that. Oh. And, It remained fairly active until, you know, I was 19. My mother died, and then we moved out of the house, and the house was raised, and a neighborhood was built on the property. So who knows if anyone's having any trouble these days? But I'm long gone. I'm back in my native California, far away from that place.
Yeah, you should maybe like send an email to someone in the neighborhood to see. Hey. Yeah. Have you had any activity? Have you been punched off a roof?
It was a very, very strange time in my life. You know, I mean, I had done some interesting odd jobs, you know, unwittingly digging graves and, you know, but not graves at a graveyard, graves somewhere where there's not supposed to be graves. That's a touchy subject. I had a lot of really bizarre experiences that I didn't quite realize were until, you know, I moved on a few years from that part of my life. But it's been colorful. And I think all of my early experiences have absolutely informed the way I think about music and what I see in movies and the potential for storytelling. And that's really, you know, part of what inspired me to want to take Dark Knight's Death Metal and create a new visual storytelling element based on that. And I'm thankful that Scott and Greg trusted me enough to fuck with that. So
yeah. Nice. Well, yes, congratulations on it all. It's fantastic. Everything I've viewed from it so far has been awesome. So
thank you.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for taking the time, man. This has been such a wonderful conversation. We very much enjoyed it. And yeah, just very excited to see what comes next from the many projects of Tyler Bates.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great day.
You're listening to Sabin Podcast! Yes!
Yeah! Well, hang on.
Yeah.
Did he just say digging graves in places he shouldn't have?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he might have. So he takes 149 episodes before we had the guest admit to digging graves. So it's taken longer than I thought it would have.
I just love, it was the fact that at the end, that came right at the end of the conversation. Sean and I looked at each other like, hang on, what? Can we do another episode just on this? I mean, what? Oh, but so many amazing stories from a hell of a career. Tyler Bates has put such a big influence on so many people, and they probably don't even know it. That's the maddest thing.
Yeah, he's fucking awesome. What a lovely chap. And we had a great, strange off-topic chat with him, and I fucking loved it. And he was absolutely lovely to us. So thank you very much to Tyler and his team once again.
Yes, and don't forget, you can now go and check out the new DC Dark Knights Death Metal project. There's a whole soundtrack album featuring some of your favorite bands, from everyone from Black Veil Brides to Dave Lombardo, Mastodon, Deftones, so much more. And a few short art video series is available online as well, where Andy Biersack is Batman and David Hasselhoff is Superman. That's the world I want to live in. And I also want the Hoff on here straight away. So Tyler, please hook us up, man. Yeah?
Please, Tyler, please. We very much enjoyed having you on. If we can, come on with the Hoff. Come on with the Hoff. That'd be cool. Imagine just having David Hasselhoff, who's recently married a woman who lives literally 10 miles away from me, just have him come on and we just talk to him like he's just a Welsh mucker. How good would that be? Like, Dio! Fucking something, Dio Hasselhoff! How's it going, then, bud?
It'd be fucking incredible. There's fingers crossed that happens. But no, what a guest. Thank you again. I very, very much enjoyed it.
Me too.
What have you been up to this week, Sean? Have you been busy behind the scenes? I did a little bit of traveling this weekend. I went up to Manchester and saw the wonderful All Time Low perform in a lovely theatre venue. I thought it was worth mentioning. First American band I've seen tour back over here in the UK since the pandemic.
Is it?
Yeah. I don't think I've seen an American band, especially at their own gig, since all this has happened.
Gig, yeah, at their own gig, maybe. But you saw American bands a slam dunk, you lying fucker.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Yeah. But, I mean, in an actual venue, not in an open field.
Oh, all right. And it was good, was it?
Awesome. You forget how many mega pop punk hits All Time Low have, because there's just their back catalogue now is insane. I just
wish they'd fuck up and come on a podcast. Like.
Well, we are trying, and I'm hoping it'll happen one day. Our good friends in the main supported as well.
Nice. They've been on. They are cool guys, then.
They are trying to win the crowd over. I think they did that. John nicked someone's hat and poked a lot of fun at stuff. They came on. This is an ultimate way to win over an English crowd for sure. They came on to Sweet Caroline. And then started doing all that with the crowd to warm them up before they went to win their songs.
What is it about that song that fucking it's been passed down through generations? Like why do people give a shit?
Do you want me to tell you? Because singing it feels so good, so good, so good. Da 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 da. Ba ba.
Right. We've got a Patreon. Go to patreon.com/that's happening. Some people we need to thank, and these are these people. Thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwaway, Mikey Engler, Janelle Castan, Mitch Perry, Kelly Young, Kelly Irwin, Dilly Grimwood, Liam Connolly, Drew Styles, Paul Hirschfield, Nathan Croshaw, Emma Barber, Sammy G, Tony Michael, Kat Besant, a full stop, Captain Hannibal, Jenny Robson, Murray Grimwood, Mike Oxmall, Johnny Phillips, Amy Campion, Tom Owen, Caroline Robinson, Chris Howard, Craig Gervin, Kevin Clark, Louis Cook, Martina McManus, Danny Eaton, Carl Pendlebury, James McNaught, Craig Harris, Jenny Munster, Lucy Deards, Emily Perry, Kelly Cannon, Stuart McNaught, Livy Cropper, John and Emma, Jason Heredia, Becky Andy, Lydia Henderson, Adam King of the Goss Parcel. Ollie, will Morgan be reading the names for episode 50 next week as he has done every 50th so far?
Well, I was going to mention this after you finished these names.
Yes, so. The answer is yes now. So everybody change him into very, very difficult names that he can't pronounce. Thank you very much. Josh, I wouldn't buy anything with Velcro. It's such a rip-off crisp. I think that was last week, so that's lazy. Thank you very much. Alice Wood, Reese Bowdring, Ben Evans, Amy Chilvers, Kate Stevenson, Connor Lewins, Daniel Stevenson, Kieran Allen, Keris Andrews. If you are part of our Patreon and you are in the section that gets a video from me, check your email, check your junk. I sent some videos out yesterday or the day before, and I might have sent you yours. So if I have, cool. If I've sent you somebody else's by accident, I'm very, very sorry, because that did happen twice.
I love how you were so outraged with my pun that you did all of that in one tone. Yep. One tone, just, yep. That's done now. Yep,
I want to get it done now. I don't want to let you talk. I don't want to let you talk anymore. You're going to ruin our business. You're going to ruin our business if you keep talking shit.
I just need to put in some extra information there. Obviously, patreon.com/sapning if you want to support us. That is the best way to. There's loads of extra bonuses and you get involved in our wonderful community. If you want to send us a message or anything, head over to @sapningpod on Twitter and Instagram. And of course, if you're good with numbers, next week is episode 150. So that's going to be a celebration. We've got a guest on we think a lot of people are going to enjoy. And as do on every 50th episode, I'm going to be reading out the names at the end.
Sign up to the Patreon and just make this motherfucker fucking squirm. Please make me say weird shit.
Even if it's just
for a week, just fucking a quid or whatever the lowest amount of money you can give is, go to patreon.com/that's happening. Let's make this motherfucker's life hell, please.
So just tune in next week to make sure you check that out, because I'm probably going to struggle and it's probably going to incriminate me in some way, fashion, form.
He's struggling already. He said incriminate
I struggle on the day. On the daily, to be fair.
Fingers crossed. Oh, well, that's made it sad. That's a sad fucking end. Fuck up trying to win people over. That's the end of this episode. If you've enjoyed it, @happeningpod. Give us a fucking listen. Help us out to Patreon. Subscribe where you can. Share it with your friends and family. Rate it as highly as you can. This is fucking over. Episode 149 featuring the mighty Tyler Bates. Thank you very much. Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.